Sports Radio 929 The Game. Thanks for tuning in here. Another edition of Off the Woodwork. I'm Craig Carlos Valentino, a.k.a. CCV woman man Jarrett Smith. Hey, Jay, you trying to stay dry out there, man?
Yeah, we can't seem to get a dry day. That's not really pleasant, but yeah.
Oh, yeah. At least hopefully they get way better weather out there in Houston than they got here in Atlanta, because you'd have to swim now. We thought it was bad the other day when they were up in Tennessee. It's even worse today.
It's just insane today, and it's one of those things, it won't stop. It's infuriating rain. Like, if it was just like a torrential downpour, that'd be one thing. No, it's just this annoying light rain.
Seattle rain. Yeah.
I see why you and Andy left.
Yeah, bruh. It's the reason why it's the suicide capital of the world. You don't want to be there, man. It's just cabin fever for days.
If I know it's coming, I can live with that. Like, I could do Seattle because I know that's what I'm expecting. I'm not expecting that in Atlanta.
Oh, yeah. I felt like that when I first got here in 2012. They said Hotlanta. I was like, cool. Where's that? Because I've seen nothing but a monsoon in 2012 and 2013, yeah. El Nino years. But yes, so definitely excited about what's coming up. It's been a while since we've been on, and we definitely got some bad news that we got to talk about leading into the season. Also want to kind of get your reaction of the preseason so far, some of the takeaways you got from there. If you have any concerns from what you saw and kind of things they can build on from positives that you saw from the preseason. And, of course, we'll get into our predictions for Saturday's match against Houston. But the number one story coming out of Atlanta, the Five Stripes camp, is Barco out 4 to 6 weeks. Tough blow right before the season starts, man.
Yeah, Atlanta United's social media account is really good at dropping this news when it's anytime it's an injury. It's like they're walking down the street and they just drop a $5 bill out of their pocket, and that $5 bill has written on it, yeah, Barco's out 4 to 6 weeks, y'all.
Yeah.
I mean, just pick it up and read it, and, well, they don't make like a grand announcement over it. It's just, hey, he's out 4 to 6 weeks. And that sucks because Barco had really grown into the preseason by the time that third game came along where he flashed that amazing goal. He had really grown into things, and you had kind of seen everything really hit stride. And a lot of it was just being patient with him, because remember, he did sit out at Independiente. He wasn't playing. He wasn't training. So he's been off the field for a while. Now he's going to be off the field for a while more.
Yeah, and like I said, it's tough because, like you said, we saw the talent, we saw the flashes, and then you finally see the goal of what he can do. You're like, man, oh, man, and you got Atlanta. I mean, Twitter kind of blew up when he knocked that one right through the back of the net. Oh, yeah. Everybody got excited. Of like, this is the possibilities of what's going forward. And so definitely a blow, but one of those things where we've always talked about. You've heard Tata, you heard Carlos, you heard all the guys. You've even heard Darren Eales as well talk about the guys that when it comes down to depth for this team, and time again of like this team, not only we're always talking about the starting 11, but you're talking about guys that come off the bench, guys that come from the two team. So that this is now that time when you're supposed to lean on those guys, because when your stars go down, it's that next man up mentality.
It should be, and it will be coming in now. And that is the question, is now that has basically lit Atlanta United Twitter on fire, is who is next man up?
Yeah.
And you've got options. The bit of good news in all this is last year you ended up replacing a wing because you moved Tito Villalba up top.
True.
You had to groom people to play the wing. And you had unproven commodities last year in Brandon Vasquez and Julian Gressel. They proved what they're capable of, and we'll get into Julian Gressel in a bit. But what you saw in preseason is not necessarily what you're going to get all season. It was a rough preseason, and that he didn't just forget how to play the game.
Yeah.
You have guys that are comfortable and experienced playing on the wing, left or right. That remains to be seen. You could always swing Tito Villalba around to the left if you wanted to. There's a lot of creativity to be had here. It's not always the perfect puzzle fit that you're thinking you're going to get, but it still can work pretty well. You've got depth now, and you've got proven depth.
So will you think over the next 4 to 6 weeks will it be more lineup will be driven by matchups, or lineup be driven by best player available for the spot?
I think it'll also be driven by the health that we have, because Tito Villalba hasn't, you know, really played a full game yet in preseason. He was getting over a knock. Looked a little rusty. The speed wasn't at full tilt. And once it is, that's another weapon. Just depends on how healthy he is going into this. And then, of course, you have Andrew Carlton.
Yeah.
Andrew Carlton is, after what Tata Martino said at the last game, where the last preseason game against Charleston, where he talked about he's closer to the first team now than he is down to going to Gwinnett.
Which was a great thing to hear.
It was a great thing to hear, and now it might be put your money up. And today's a big day. Carlton training up there. The club is training in Marietta this afternoon. At least they were this morning, this being Thursday.
They're probably swimming now, but yeah, yes.
They're jet skiing now. Not that that's any safer. It's a big day for him because this is one of his last chances to show, hey, I need to be in that rotation. And whether or not that starts in Houston, that remains to be seen, because Houston's a really tough team to face on the road. They only lost once at home last year. Drew four times, won 12 times.
Yeah, so and you talked about, and that's kind of like, you mentioned some of the guys when it comes to who Tata has the availability of guys he can bring in. Out of the guys you're thinking, like you said, that they're your top five, who do you think will be the guy match one Saturday going out there at 3:30?
I think it's going to end up being Julian Gressel. Now, whether that's the left or the right remains to be seen. It depends on what happens with Tito Vijaba. But I think Julian Gressel is going to step in. I don't know what position, because positions might change. Nagby might move over.
Yeah.
You could have Vijaba move over. But I think Gressel is going to be the guy, that the name that we see on there. Because, as I said, as much as he struggled, that's not who he is. And he proved last year what he can do for you. And I wouldn't be shocked to see him out there on the wing and doing more work and, you know, being not, it doesn't have to be a man of the match performance, but yeah, he can be a stabilizing effort. And he's such a physical effort out there, especially against a team like Houston that has some physicality.
Yeah. No, I think when it's all said and done, I think Gressel is the guy that you want him to, you don't want to see that sophomore slump, the guy to take a step back. You know, he didn't, like you mentioned earlier, he didn't have the great preseason that, you know, you kind of expect from him. But I think that if you continue to show confidence in a player like that, especially a young player, he'll, you know, he'll know that his manager has his back. And at the end of the day, he'll go out there and perform. So I think that, like you said, he's been out there before. He's seen the lights, been the lights, knows kind of what Tata expects of him. So I think at the end of the day, you go with the proven commodity. But like you said, it's all really going to depend on, you know, with Vijaba and what he has going on as well. So I'm excited about that. Definitely nervous, but
oh yeah,
it's one of those, you're like, you know, we had this Barco watch for forever. Me and you were doing shows time and time again. We finally get the guy. We finally see the guy. We finally see the guy score. And you're like, damn it. It's like knowing what your Christmas present is, and now you can't open a damn thing.
Yeah, it's very much. And, you know, it is a blow. Because he is brought in at $15 million. It wasn't just like we spent $15 million and we hope he works. Like, no, this kid's insanely talented. He's got all of the tools in the world to be a game-changing force. You lose a game-changing force, that's going to be a blow in any capacity.
Yeah, he wasn't some project that you brought in. Like, yeah, let's just see what he can do. Like, no, you knew this guy could be that missing piece that takes you to a cup.
Mm. You brought him into wreck shop from day one.
Yes.
And
now day one, he's sitting on the bench.
Yeah, now day one, he's sitting on the bench, and you're having to go with the guys you had last year. Now, granted, those guys from last year, minus Yamil Assad, who's gone, those guys from last year got you to the playoffs, and you know, a couple more points either way, you're skipping the first round entirely and sitting on a first round bye with the top two seeds, sitting True. Only behind the greatest team this league has ever seen in Toronto.
Yeah, no, you're right. And so like I said, there's definitely a lot of firepower when it comes to it. And we just saw a lot of different mixes and matches when it came to the preseason. And I kind of want to talk to you a little bit about the preseason, because we kind of talked a little bit about players that didn't perform as well, some that did. What are some of the takeaways you take from the preseason? You nervous and concerned about anything you saw from the preseason so far?
Not really. A lot of that got solved for me emotionally and mentally when they played Minnesota. Now, granted, that was a 1-1 draw, but that game against Minnesota on a different night, Atlanta has 4 goals, 5 goals, 8 goals, somewhere in that range. I think they had 2 or 3 cleared off the line. Minnesota's goalkeeper, Lampson, was just on it that night. Like, he was on a Zach Steffen move.
Yes.
It was very much Atlanta creating chances. On the other hand, Minnesota has a lot of questions coming into this year on that defense, if they're going to be better than last year. And right now, I'm not convinced they are. Atlanta created plenty of chances. We didn't see the ball go in the back of the net necessarily, but you saw the chance creation. You saw the chemistry starting to link up. I wasn't that worried about it. And then Charleston, you can basically throw out the bathwater for a lot of it because it was backups, but it was great to see because everyone spent the preseason freaking out about the number 6 role. Jeff Larinowicz is going to slot in there most likely. And then behind him, it's probably going to be Chris McCann, despite the belly aching from everybody. And I understand like Chris McCann was not great
at all.
I was really impressed with Andrew Wheeler, Aminu, third round pick from last year, comes in immediately and just showed out in that Charleston game. Granted, it was a USL squad. I don't care. He was in a man-of-the-match performance, incredible athleticism, solid passing, nothing necessarily spectacular, but it was solid, and it's what I wanted from that 6'8", and then he dropped back to right back, looked very good at right back, a lot of physicality to go with that speed. He handled the position well.
He looked like he belonged.
It did.
He looked like
he rode the edge really well between playing physical and, you know, and getting whistles constantly. He rode that edge really well. Real excited about Franco Escobar. He looked like a problem. As Randy Mack would say, that man is a problem.
That man's a problem out there.
Franco Escobar looked like a problem on the right side, getting up and down. He's going to bring a lot to the game offensively, I think. He looked good. They said Julian Gressel, it wasn't there in preseason.
Yeah.
He had plenty of chances. It just wasn't clicking. But again, That man was Rookie of the Year. He put together an amazing season last year. And the thing that always impressed me about Gressel is when he had bad outings or bad stretches, he was always able to bounce back mentally. And I
that
think
is
that's
true.
I think that's what we'll see this year. Oliver Shannon looked good in limited time. I want to see more from Romario Williams and Brandon Vasquez. Brandon Vasquez is a guy who could enter this rotation on the wing. He's got that skill set. And Romario Williams is just that big target forward who's far more athletic than he should be at that size.
Yeah, and could be that guy that comes off after when Martinez, you know, needs a spell or something like that. You may need a guy up top. So, he showed that he can actually score when given a chance. So, I'm excited about that, too. I think one of the major concerns, and I kind of want to get your opinion on as well, is the I always thought that, and my takeaway from the Minnesota game as well, I'm not a big goals guy. Like I said, if you're creating opportunities, I think at the end of the day, like you get 10 shots on goal. Sometimes you go for 10, sometimes you go 7 of them like you did against Minnesota. So I think that it's all about creating opportunities when it comes down to it. My concern more or less has always been with the back line. Is it going to be one of those performances? We've always talked about, well, they never replace Carmona. You know, you worry about, are we going to a 3-back line? Are we going to a 4-back line? Depending on, are we going to try to cover this up by players or by scheme? And I guess but the number one you've always heard from all the other critics out there is, well, we'll score enough goals to not worry about it because we got Barco and we got this. Well, now we don't got Barco. So now are you worried about the defensive side when you lose one of your best scoring opportunities on the other side?
Not necessarily. This is a team that gave up 40 goals last year. That was fourth, I believe, in the league in terms of total goals allowed. And they're bringing back 3 of the 4 guys on the back line, and they're upgrading that fourth position. Leandro Gonzalez-Pires remains one of the best defenders in this league. Michael Parkhurst, for being older, for I believe he's 34 now, the sun may be starting to set and this guy may be starting orange on his career, but he's still a leader and he's still a very cerebral player. Like what he's lacking now at this point in physicality as a player, he makes up for being in the right position. Greg Garza remains an incredibly good left back. And you've got Jeff Larinowicz sitting in front of that line. Now, Larinowicz is going to have a heavier workload without Carlos Carmona providing some of the defensive work out of the 8 role, doing that box-to-box work.
Yeah.
But I don't think you're going to – it's not like Atlanta is going to completely fall off the face of the earth and start giving up, you know, 60 goals. That I don't think you're in that territory.
Especially when you got a guy like that behind you in between the pipes.
Yeah, Brad Guzan organizes things really well. Has looked very good. And – you know, I understand that it's always a bomb scare for people. There people are waiting on Brad Guzan to make mistakes. And at some time, there are times where I feel like we ignore the really good performances because we're so busy waiting for the bad ones.
That other shoe to fall. Yeah. Exactly. No, you're right. You know, I think that's why my concern when it comes to the defense is always just that back line. I think that at times,
and that's
like
fair.
It's like you said, there's times where they'll take a 5 to 10 minute lull where you're like, what's going on, guys? Like we saw, like when we talked about the other day with McCann had a great game until he's just like, what did you just do? So it's like it seems like at times there's about a 5 minute stretch where it's like, oh wow, and hopefully, like I said, that usually is the point where we shoot ourselves in the foot. So that's always been one of my concerns going forward when it comes to this preseason. But I'm excited about what I've seen from the preseason because I think that with the opportunities they've created, they'll be able to score a bunch of goals going forward. And hopefully, like I said, that will take away from those 5-10 minutes to where we look like, what the heck are you doing? Speaking now to Travel Night, going that forward, we got a game on Saturday, man. It's March 3rd, Saturday, 3:30 Eastern against Houston. What's your... I'll word it this way. Atlanta United wins if so-and-so plays well. Who's got to step up for us to get the win?
Atlanta United wins if Darlington Nagbe controls possession and does a little bit of work defensively. So here's the thing about Houston's back line. They're old. DeMarcus Beasley is still playing this game. He will be playing until the heat death of the universe and expansion stops.
I'm telling
stops.
You, dude. I think he started playing on the first ever USA team.
a prospective starting back four. Here's the ages across the back. 35, 33, 27, 33. You got one guy under 30.
It's like guys I went to school with. Like, jeez.
You've got an older back line that can be susceptible. You've got a central mid that's a little susceptible at times. If Nagbe can control the middle of the field, I think Atlanta can handle this, especially if he can step up. And you don't have to be Carlos Carmona. It doesn't have to be just like that. But if he can just take care of the ball and pick out a few passes, pick out a few interceptions, and trigger some runs, I think Atlanta United's got enough speed, and they're explosive enough on the counter. They can get a leg up, and Houston wants to counter, but Houston wants to counter with the long ball a lot of times. They want to go down the wings because of guys like Kyoto, if he plays. Albert Elis, the Black Panther,
yep.
If you remember from last year, that yes. Black Panther celebration with the mask and all, Albert Elis is a monster. They're going to want to go down the wings with speed, not unlike Atlanta does. They don't want to pop, 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 bang. They want to go over the top. They want to go King Griffey moonshot.
Just go deep.
Yeah, it is very much a go deep offense. Ja'Cory Harris, Miami days.
Right. all right, everybody go deep.
Yeah, everybody go deep. Yeah, I think if Atlanta can take care of the ball, and especially Nagby in the middle of the field taking care of the ball and not turning it over and picking out a few interceptions, I think Atlanta's in good shape, and I think they can kind of pin Houston back a bit because Houston might press with the front three, but they're not probably going to pour everybody forward on that press. Middle of the field is going to be important for Atlanta, and that a lot of that depends on if Nagby's in the middle or on the left as well.
No, you're right. I think that when I was kind of thinking about who's the guy that has to show up for, you know, the five stars to get the W, I was thinking like Nagby as well. And I think that, but I think that Nagby will show up. But I think to kind of piggyback on what you're talking about, if he can control the middle and get out on a break and get the offense started, I think then it allows him to get the ball to Almiron and Almiron to do the rest and let Almiron run this offense. Seems like time and time again last year when this offense was most lethal is when he was pushing forward with the ball, creating for everybody, you know, finding people out on the wing, finding guys going up top. And so I think that at the end of the day, this offense still goes through Almiron. I love the, like I said, I love his game. I think that when he, like I said, when he's at his best of his game, this team is running on all cylinders. I think Nagby's going to play an important part of that. He's the guy that's going to pretty much, you know, he's the quarterback handing him the ball. He giving the ball to the running back and let the running back go down the field and do his thing. So I think that you're right. Nagby's going to play a huge part of it. But I think at the end, especially in the final third and stuff, it's going to come down to can Almiron make the right passes, find the right guys, or create the right opportunities for this team to score. And I think if they score early, I think it ends up getting ugly. I think if you find a way to, if it's, you know, 0-0 at halftime, then they'll find a way to, and I'll kind of give my prediction now, I think that the Five Stripes will find a way to get, you know, two, so it'll be 2-1. But if they can get a goal within the first 15 minutes or so, I think it ends up being like a 3-1, 4-1 kind of game. So what do you think? When it's all said and done, when the dust settles, what's it looking like in Houston?
When the dust settles, I think Atlanta's getting out with 1 point. I think it's a 2-2 draw. I think Atlanta does a good job of controlling things for the most part. I think they've still got some meshing to do, and I think a lot of it, honestly, is the fact that Houston is so good at home.
Mm-hmm.
Houston has figured out the last year just how not to lose at home. I think Atlanta's up 2-1. I think they give up a late goal. One of the big concerns with Houston is Houston's really good on set pieces in the air. This is where a guy like Chris McCann can come and use late games, no matter how much people don't want to hear that name.
You can't take away from what he can do on set pieces.
He's a monster. He's physical. I worry about like Houston picking up a late goal in a set piece and then pulling a 2-2 draw, or Atlanta pulls one
still in one late.
I think it's a 2-2 draw. Atlanta walks out of there with a point, and given the last year, walking out of Houston with a point is not a bad situation to be on or to be in. If they get out of this, it's because Tomas Perez is not playing in this game. The playmaker number 10 for Houston, he was suspended at the last playoff game last year, so he will not be available. If he's not there, which they don't really like to build through the middle like that
like
anyway.
Like we were saying anyway, they like to sit it deep. Yeah,
they like to sit deep and fire off the counter. But since he is not there and he's not there to be a playmaker, I think if Atlanta picks up points, that's going to be a big part of it because Houston isn't able to sit back isn't able to counter, and they might have to like swarm and attack. And I'm not convinced that Bjorka is going to be the kind of guy who sits in that 10 role instead and provides for that team.
Gotcha. Yeah, and I think you're right, especially when it comes to, and that's one of my concerns because we saw kind of in the Nashville game, that's how they got their goal. Just send it deep, let a guy try to make a play on a ball, all of a sudden, you know, bad miscommunication, and the ball ends up being in the back of the net. So you're right. That's one of the concerns I have about their offense going forward. But I think that, you know, at the end of the day, I think it will end up being too much firepower, and I think these guys will find a way to, you know, to get 3 points. And then we'll be able to come back home next week, Sunday, home opener here, March 11th, 3 o'clock kick here. It should be 70,000 strong. It's going to be amazing. You'll be able to hear the game on 99thegame.com. Real quick, though, before we get out of here, I wanted to kind of just talk to you a little bit about it. Neymar goes down, brutal, out. They're talking about it could be 3 months. What would that mean for not only for PSG, who now you're playing the second leg? You brought a guy in for 200-something million. You always win your division. They always win. That's always easy.
Yeah.
You win it for like the last 30 years. But you didn't bring Neymar to win your division. You brought him in to win Champions League. And now you got a chance to get bounced out because you don't have your best player. What does that mean? Was this a bad signing for them? If they get knocked out again and don't win the cup, Is that just $200 million wasted?
Oh, they're going to be swinging blades around up there because Paris is basically in this mode of we're trying to win Champions League, and if it doesn't work year to year, they're probably going to tear it around. Now, I mean, not to say they're going to like sell Neymar off if they just brought him in. Neymar is what he is. He's an amazing player, one of the best in the world. But they're going to go and spend more money and make more changes. And they won't be satisfied until they make that deep run. And, I mean, they got run around by Real Madrid the first leg.
Yes.
So if they somehow pull out the second leg.
Without Neymar? Wow.
And then they have to make the most of that run without Neymar?
Yeah, because now it's talking about.
It might be to next year, but I wonder how many heads do roll.
Oh, and the crazy part, you're right. When I saw the article and it was like saying, I thought one of the best things ever was like, oh, he may be out a couple of weeks or so. And they were like, well, before we decide, Brazilian doctors are now on the flight coming to Paris to take a look. And now you're hearing doctors saying 3 months. What does that mean for Brazil as a national team? I mean, you think about it, like I said, that's the one thing they only care about is the World Cup. So it's great that Neymar's out there doing his thing in Paris, but at the end of the day, the national team comes first.
That means you send him to wherever Kobe Bryant used to go and get treatment, and you get him ready for the World Cup because this can be Brazil's World Cup.
Yeah.
In Russia.
So, like I said, right? So, like I said, that's one of the things I kind of wanted to get your opinion on because, like, we talked about how we lost kind of our best player for a little bit. Now, looking at the big thing, everybody knows Neymar, and to see a guy like that, young, talented, to go down in a World Cup seat, in a World Cup year like this, is definitely going to be brutal for Brazil going forward. But, like I said, tune in next week. We'll be back recapping the game. Hopefully, it's a W. Hopefully, come back home with three points, and then we'll be able to preview next week's match against DC United with a guy who, if he wouldn't be playing in D.C., probably playing for us right now because looks like there's an open position out on the wing right now.
I don't want to talk about it.
So definitely, like I said, we'll definitely talk about that next week. It'll be a lot of fun. Jay, be safe out there in the rain, man, and hopefully we come back with a W, man. Talk to you next week.
All right, sounds good. Peace. Take care, y'all.